It is time for the Media Beat from David Tereshchuk, his weekly review of media coverage for Robinhood Radio and exclusive to Robinhood Radio. David is a multimedia and international journalist with his own online column at themediabeat.us. And as a special correspondent since 2012, he has contributed TV reports to the PBS network, mostly on ethical issues. Here's David.
This is David Tereshchuk with the Media Beat for the very last weekend of the year, the weekend beginning December 29th, 2023. After some months of Euro travel, I'm back in my home base of New York City, which I've traditionally, in broadcasts, online, and in print, called the media capital of the world. I repeat that label now with a tinge of discomfort. We're at a point in the calendar when journalists of a certain bent try, as an annual ritual, to predict the coming year. It will clearly be a year that sets a peculiar record. More national and regional elections will take place in one year than ever before. More than 2 billion voters worldwide are due to go to the polls in 2024. However, when I turn to my mostly reliable hometown newspaper, the New York Times, I see a disappointingly inaccurate headline for that coming year. It says, "Two wars, 50 elections. The economy faces rising geopolitical risks." The Times headline writers clearly mean the two wars of Gaza and Ukraine, but their editorial myopia seems to have made them forget Sudan, for instance, where 14,000 people have been killed this year, and more than 6 million people have been uprooted from their homes. It's a war that I noted serious journalists in Europe have been painstaking about not forgetting. And with varying degrees of impact on the world economy, there is also the war in Yemen, endangering global shipping in the Red Sea Straits. Elsewhere in the Middle East, there is ongoing fighting in Syria and Iraq, which directly involves American action, as evidenced only this week with U.S. forces destroying militants' bases there in retaliation for the wounding of 3 American soldiers. There is the long-lasting war in the Sahel and Maghreb against Islamic jihadists and serious continuing conflicts in Somalia, Philippines, Myanmar. The list goes on, with ever more lesser but still deadly wars being fought. I'll acknowledge, however, that the Times forecast of 50 elections worldwide is more accurate. Though the global electoral scene is a little more complex to convey in a headline, among those 50 prospective opportunities for citizens to vote is one single set of elections for the European Parliament, which will in fact take place in 27 different countries. One country less, I can't help pointing out, than in the last vote 4 years ago, because Britain has in the meantime left Europe. The individual countries that will be voting include some undeniably significant nations, our own US, of course, plus India, the world's largest democracy by population, South Africa, the UK, Indonesia, Mexico, oh, and Russia too, though it's hard to seriously count Vladimir Putin's despotic rule as anything like an electoral democracy. But nonetheless, 100 million Russians are expected to be voting in March of the new year. But inevitably, media attention here is concentrated most on the not-so-far-off polling day of November 5th, 2024, in our own country, the US of A. Not too distant for political correspondents and their legions to be declaring how the campaigning will go, especially on the White House side, where, of course, there is greater communication between the candidate's team and the press. And, of course, there's more clarity and more objective evidence as to how campaign money is being used, always the greatest indicator in American elections. The Biden campaign is already reported to be spending heavily on advertising directed sharply toward Black and Latino voters in key swing states. The motivation is not so much that these voting blocs will, out of disappointment, political weariness, or apathy, switch to Trump, but that they could stay home or vote for a third-party candidate. Reporters clearly briefed by the Biden side are emphasizing how much of a threat to our whole way of life Trump presents. Some stories have cited, for instance, a private meeting with cash contributors to the Biden campaign in Boston that was put on the record by being videoed on a misbehaving attendee's iPhone. This is 21st century political reporting, after all. Biden himself was there, and he said that he'll be pointing out how Trump, and I'll quote the recording directly, threatens the right to choose an abortion, obviously, the Affordable Care Act, health care overall, and America's standing in the world. But the greatest threat he poses of all is towards our very democracy. Such are the crucial and very basic, all-encompassing grounds on which the 2024 contest will be fought. At least, that's what the White House expects. On the media side, though, how does it look? The Trump phenomenon, which of course shows no sign of fading, looms justifiably large. Perhaps most of all, in the venerable columns of the Atlantic magazine, which dates back to 1857, but still remains up-to-date, agile, and comprehensive in its thoroughly argued insights. It was stunningly effective, I can't forget, in its science-based coverage of the COVID pandemic. For the dawn of 2024, its January-February edition is devoted entirely to an almost apocalyptic set of analyses. Many different takes on the single question, what if Trump wins? I don't believe the Atlantic has ever devoted so much attention to a single topic since the days of immediate shock after 9/11, or earlier in the darkest days of the Vietnam War, or the massive reassessments called for after the Pearl Harbor attack 82 years ago. The Atlantic's examination is a mass effort in which 24 different writers, many of them distinguished practitioners, explain exactly how it would look as Donald Trump worked to destroy America's civic and democratic institutions, including our courts, our national political culture, and even the U.S. military. Staff writer Tom Nichols sets out to forestall any argument that arraying all these big journalistic guns is overreaction, reminding us that criticism of Trump in 2016 as a fascist and an autocrat were dismissed then as alarmist. Nowadays, we have the evidence of his 4 years in power by which to judge him empirically, and Nichols calls on his own days of being a self-confessed pedant as a college professor of politics when he lays out an overarching definition of fascism for us, a term coined by Benito Mussolini, I should remind us all. The definition, fascism, Nichols writes, is a holistic ideology that elevates the state over the individual, except for a sole leader around whom there is a cult of personality, glorifies hyper-nationalism and racism, worships military power, hates and wants to crush liberal democracy. It's hard to argue against that, sounding very apt in the here and now. Elsewhere among the 24 carefully framed articles, there's one by David Frum, who once advised George W. Bush in the White House and still describes himself as a conservative Republican. He boldly predicts that our much-cherished checks, balances, and safeguards are simply not designed for the likes of Trump. Our existing constitutional system, he says, has no room for the subversive legal maneuvers of a criminal-in-chief. And Frum goes on to say that Trump's great pile of legal troubles, especially the multiple felony indictments, will lead him in even more drastic directions. For his own survival, says Frum, he would have to destroy the rule of law. As we all begin a year of processing how we will exercise our most precious democratic gift in the voting booth, I strongly urge you to take a good look at the Atlantic's new issue. That's all from the Media Beat this week. If you have been, thanks for listening. And if you feel you can, have a very good year ahead.
Thank you very much, David. We will talk to you next week. David can be found at themediabeat.us.